You're listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Well, hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Rich.
And Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And we're just here very briefly at the start of this special bonus episode. This is our Strictly Amaraterra episode. Now, Amaraterra are the Italian pizzica band who have been supplying our music for the Giro d'Italia since 2016, since the first Giro that we covered in full. And their music is wonderful. Our listeners love it. And it really, really evocative of the Giro now for me. But they were in the news recently because they were invited to appear on a spin-off program from Strictly Come Dancing by the BBC, but there was no fee involved. And this made The Guardian, and it provoked quite a big response from people, including a lot of our listeners, who were horrified that they were being asked to perform for free by an organization like the BBC. So we got in touch with them and thought we'd try and do something with them. They've obviously had a terrible year like everybody else in the performing arts, not being able to perform live. And they are trying to put the finishing touches to their album at the moment as well. And they're hoping to be back out on the road next year. But we thought we'd just put this, we're going to hear from some of the band and hear their music in this episode. But Daniel, you were the person who discovered Amaraterra for us back in 2016.
Yes, Rich. Well, at the time we were looking for some theme music for our Giro coverage, something authentic. Italy, not a nation, not a country whose music is generally exported that far and wide. Certainly not in popular music anyway. But we happened upon this group that were based in London, and I was very intrigued by the type of music they were performing. It was this music from which originated in the south of Italy called pizzica music, and I did a bit of reading about what this consisted of, and it derived from an ancient ritual that was used to drive out the poison when a woman in particular was bitten by a tarantula spider. And this ritual used to take place where everyone would beat tambourines and the woman herself would shake very vigorously to sort of drive out this poison. And this had given rise, so the legend had it, to a dance and a style of music which had become very closely associated with the Salento region in particular, which is part of Puglia. So if you think of Puglia, it's the heel of Italy, and the Salento is kind of the heel itself, the sort of or part of the heel itself, the kind of stiletto. So we were intrigued, as I say, and we listened to a bit of what Amaraterra had recorded in the past, and as you say, we thought it would go tremendously with what we're going to produce for the Giro d'Italia, and it's become synonymous certainly with our coverage of the Giro, and I think, judging by the feedback from listeners, synonymous really for them with that time of year, with May and June.
One thing that sticks in my mind about that first Giro that we covered on the road, Daniel, was that it started in the Netherlands, didn't it? And we were driving over and still kind of finalising what the opening sound of our daily coverage would be. And when I first heard Amaraterra, I'll admit, and this won't surprise you, of the three of us, I was probably the one that was a little bit less sure. It wasn't that I thought, no, we shouldn't use this. But I suppose in my head, I thought the obvious would be something sort of operatic. I was thinking maybe Italia 90, the BBC famously used Nessun Dorma, sung by Pavarotti.
Unfortunately, Pavarotti wasn't available to make our theme music in 2016.
But again, that certainly shared the desire to not have kind of, you know, in air quotes, generic sports program music. I wanted something that really sang of Italy, but realized pretty quickly, especially once our producer had kind of narrowed it down to this, the famous, now famous refrain from the song Cozze, It really, you know, I had no idea what the song was about. I didn't understand the lyrics, but it instantly became sort of a toe tapper, a kind of sing along. And quite quickly, really, we saw comments from people on social media saying, and still do to this day, people saying things like, I've no idea what the lyrics are, but I still sing them with gusto whenever the theme tune comes on. And we have posted the lyrics on Twitter and Facebook, and we'll do that again this week while this episode's online. But I just, I was won over very, very quickly to having this as our Giro theme, just because it just felt like being transported to Italy, was strolling past a square where a live band was playing in an evening. You know, it's that kind of vibe, isn't it? It's real kind of rustic, authentic Italian music. And yeah, whenever I hear just a little bit of it, whether it be Cozze, the signature theme tune, or one of the other tracks that features in Kilometer Zero episodes, or as you know, the bridge between one part of an episode and the next, yeah, it transports me to Italy.
And you talk about us, Lionel, veering away from the obvious and the cliched. Well, most Italians don't actually understand the lyrics to the Pizzica and the Amara Terra music, because the songs are generally written in dialects.
As I discovered when I spoke to members of the band, I never knew that, Daniel, but you learn something new every day. But yeah, I mean, we used Amara Terra obviously this year as well in our Giro coverage, our kind of coverage of our virtual Giro. And it's such an effective way of transporting us and you as a listener, I think, to a particular time and place. And couldn't imagine the Giro coverage now without Amara Terra. So we're incredibly grateful to them. They've been fantastically supportive of us. Hopefully we've been supportive of them too. And we had them along at a show a couple of years ago as well, and we'd love to do that again in the future. At the end of this episode, I'll tell you how you can support Amara Terra and their work if you'd like to do so. I mean, they were very reluctant to do any kind of fundraising, even after this BBC story. And they prefer to make money by doing live shows, but they can't do live shows at the moment. And besides, I think a lot of our listeners wouldn't be able to go to live shows anyway because of where they live. So if any of you would like to show your appreciation for Amara Terra, you can do so. But in the meantime, enjoy this conversation with three members of Amara Terra, with quite a bit of their music in this episode as well. And this is definitely our final episode of 2020. So we'll say cheerio and wish you a very happy Christmas and Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Zarina, mufferina, rotolo, don don do, c'è canonico non do, la faina prede che ti nasca c'è tutto furbito. Tassugora fai munna scazzo, e tassugora fai munna scazzo. C'è brighina fortuna, na c'è brighina fortuna, c'è brighina cuzzona, na vente bodia. Na vente bodia, na vente bodia, c'è brighina cuzzona, na vente bodia. E apreoli, apreoli, apreola, ama me bella e non me abbandona. E apreoli, apreoli, apreola, ama me bella e non me abbandona.
Well, I'm joined by Amara Terra, or at least three members of Ameriterra. We'll get on to just how big the band is a bit later on. But Ameriterra have been in the news recently, and that inspired or provoked a big response from our listeners, for whom Ameriterra is the Giro d'Italia. We featured your music in our Giro cover since 2016, and every time I hear it, it's like injecting Italy, southern Italy in particular, and the Giro d'Italia directly into my veins. So I'm joined by Alfredo Gianni. Hello, Alfredo.
Hello.
Mark Glanville.
Hi.
Mark's voice will be well known to people. And Cassandra Balosso-Bardin. Is that correct?
Yeah, hello.
How's my pronunciation?
Perfect.
Now, Alfredo, you're Italian. Mark, you're English. And Cassandra, you're French.
Absolutely.
So a multinational gathering. Just a brief intro to you all. Cassandra, your recorder bagpipes are your thing, aren't they? Since 2017, you've lectured at the University of Lincoln. You're a senior lecturer in music, and you lead the MA music program. You did a PhD in ethnomusicology, focusing on the anthropology of the Majorcan bagpipes. And you founded the International Bagpipe Conference series in 2012. Obviously, this caught my eye, but no mention of Scottish bagpipes in there.
No, the whole point was to actually show the world that there's more to bagpipes than the Scottish bagpipe, which is what immediately triggers people when they hear the word bagpipe. So that was the point. And of course, in southern Italy, there's lots of bagpipes as well. But unfortunately, we don't have that in the band yet.
Not yet. Good. Watch this space. I like it. You perform with bands from different cultural backgrounds, including Italy, UK, France, Sweden, Anatolia, and more recently, Northwest Africa. So very kind of multicultural, multinational. Mark, you are the bass baritone. Your voice, very familiar to us. We use those kind of clips, I suppose, to create a certain mood in some of our episodes, and it's very, very effective. You've been with Opera North, Scottish Opera, Lisbon Opera, and the new Israeli Opera. I just want to say a little bit about you, because I didn't know, just how fascinating your early life has been. You were a football hooligan.
Yeah.
just leave that hanging there.
I'm still a Millwall supporter.
Well,
but we won't go into that one.
We'll not get into that. Maybe there'll be a connection with one of the songs that we'll hear. No, maybe not at the moment. You wrote your memoir, The Goldberg Variations, in 2003, and it nominated for quite a few awards, and sounds like a really fascinating story of a journey from Oxford University to the terraces of Millwall via opera. Really
kind of, yeah.
Unusual. Your father is Brian Glanville.
That's right.
The doyen of football writing, sports journalism in the UK.
That's right.
And still going strong.
No.
Oh.
Unfortunately, I'd love to be able to say yes, but until a year ago, he was still doing it. I have to say, I gave him quite a lot of help with his last report, which was a Fulham game. But he's just turned 89, and he's got Parkinson's, and he's not really able to do it anymore. But I mean, he kept going until he was 88 years old, and started when he was 17 professionally. So that's quite an act to follow, actually.
It is. I'm sorry to hear that. I seem to recall his byline. You've been reading his byline quite recently, but maybe further away.
Right, because he's written a load of obituaries that are on file, particularly at The Guardian. So when certain players, like perhaps Nobby Stiles, died, my dad's obituary for him would have been on file, and they would have run it.
Mm.
So I would, yeah. So people do think that he's still writing at the top of his game, but those things were written a while ago, actually.
Right, and The Guardian will regularly sort of publish old columns, old pieces of his, and it's he's one of these guys like Hugh McIlvany, I suppose, who's just a kind of very original writer and really changed football.
Yeah, in fact, Hugh McIlvany I used to know pretty well. Hugh McIlvany and my father played together in a team that my father created with another very fine football journalist called John Moynihan, called Chelsea Casuals. And that was a team that went for about 40 years or so. And just about everybody, bar the kitchen sink, played for it, including the great Italian centre forward Giorgio Chinaglia. I happened to be in the play in the same team as him. And in fact, he gave me the assist for me to score a goal. My greatest claim to fame.
Wow. Alfredo as well, you're the guy we first made contact with, I think, about Amaraterra and becoming the our kind of Italian soundtrack to our coverage in Italy. Can you tell me a bit about, you know, just how the band came to be?
The band came to be about almost 10 years ago. I think we are approaching 10 years ago. Personally, I found a classified advert on Gumtree, I think. They were looking for Italian musicians. At that time, it was already a group of people from Puglia. It was Carla, was one of the first, Simona, Antonio, Massimiliano were the founders, so to speak, and other people that moved in and out of the band. It started just because we missed the music. There is a community of Apulians in London, including some very nice restaurants and places where you can play. And that's how it started. And it took traction. We realized that people loved it, that we were getting people wherever we played. And then we started to, okay, let's make this thing a bit more regular. Let's find a regular venue, the long missed Jamboree in Limehouse, which was our house and residency for 5 years, I think. And one thing after the other, and we ended up playing in festivals, meeting you guys, which was one of the best things about Amaraterra. It has been a great, great team.
Well, just, thank you. That's wonderful to hear. I mean, Pizzica Music is from the southeast of Italy. Is that your region? Is that where you're from?
I'm from the southwest. I'm from a bit further north, like Napoli, Naples. We have our own peculiar folk tradition, which is very closely related to the pizzica and to other styles like tarantella from Calabria. Then there is a Sicilian tradition. So, the South has been a single country in a way for much longer than Italy itself. So there has always been an exchange of musical instruments and styles.
Cassandra, can I bring you in? Just can you sort of characterize the music for us and tell us about how you got involved?
Well, for me, this music is... Basically, once you hear it, you can't stop unhearing it. And as soon as you hear it, you just want to dance it. And that's how I got into this music. I got in when I was dancing. So I was living in Paris at the time and I was studying and I was all over the folk music scene, playing everywhere. And then people told me, oh, there's this amazing bar in Belleville and you need to go and these Italians are playing. So I went there and discovered this music from southern Italy. They're from a town called Cisternino in Puglia, and just heard this music and then learned how to dance. So I went in there through the dancing thing and then was listening to the instruments go like, these are my instruments actually. And then when I came to London for my PhD, I heard Amaraterra play at SOAS, where I was studying, School of Oriental and African Studies. And then I remember I went to Alfredo and I spoke to him saying, look, I play the Gallician bagpipes. It's very similar. The music is based on 6-8, which is taka 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 taka. So 6 beats in a bar, but divided in 2. And it's very similar to lots of rhythms. That's why a lot of people, when they hear it, they always think, oh, this is like an Irish jig. It's not, but the rhythm is similar. And in Galicia, they have very similar rhythms that I would play on the bagpipe. And I kind of understood this music because I'd been dancing it and hearing it a lot. And at the time, Alfredo completely ignored me because he probably gets a lot. Yeah, you get a lot. Oh, he was like, no, very interesting, very interesting. I'll get
why,
in touch.
Why are you going to change my mind then?
Well, because their flute player left and their flute player, Yeah, Pier Paolo. So I had actually done another gig with him, completely disconnected, with a guitarist who's unfortunately passed away since, actually, very young. And he, when he left, he said, Cassandra, do you want to replace me? Because I think you you do really well and you play the right instruments. He was a flute player, and I play the recorder and pipes, which are actually even closer to the tradition than the transverse flute. And that's how I got in. And then I remember one rehearsal, and then boom, on stage, yay, you can figure this out. And so I basically learned the music on stage. I just had the right outfit. I remember the first time I played was in Bedroom Bar in Rivington Street in
I remember it well.
In London, East London. And I just had the right outfit because it was my folk outfit. And I remember Alfredo walking in and saying, oh, yeah, you've got the right clothes. It's fine. You're in now. So that sealed the deal. And
I remember Alfredo saying to me, this girl's coming along. She's phenomenal. She's better than all of us.
You see, I'm not that nice. Bad. I'm not that bad. It's just a pretense.
Let's hear Diavica. Is that correct pronunciation? Diavica?
It's actually Diavica.
Diavica. Diavica. We'll obviously edit that to make me sound competent. Diavica. Okay.
Ikatzen mia hori agetonia Egi datina gapizo zilo Etzo zilo, etzo zilo Egi datina gapizo zilo Etzo zilo, etzo zilo Egi datina gapizo zilo Melodia in bocca le dita tonerò e tonerò e tonerò in bocca le dita tonerò e tonerò.
You know, what can you tell me about this song? What sort of I guess a big part of what you do is are these live shows and seeing the people's response to the music. You know, what sort of response does this one get?
I mean, this is a song. It's a lovely song to do live, this one. I mean, I get it ends with la 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 la, and I start conducting the audience and getting the audience to sing along with me, la 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 la. So you really get audience participation with this particular song. It's a lovely, as you said, it's a lovely upbeat song. It's funny, I first heard it, I think, at La Notte della Taranta, the major Pizzica Festival, which takes place in Melpignano in the deep Salento every year. And it was, I think, the first time I ever went there, I heard this song. And actually, I think I would have pronounced it as you did, Diavica, because I really didn't have a clue at that point what I was getting into with all this stuff. It was before Amaratera and all of that. And I remember just saying Diavica and just thinking that's like a kind of quite a sexy word. I don't know, it just is a word that appealed to me, and I loved the song. And eventually when I realized that wonderful word Diavica, which is actually Diavica, means, wait for it, drum roll, I went. That's all it means. It's a lovely song. It's typical of the Greek. It's in Greco. So it's a medieval Greek dialect. Greco is actually a almost without doubt a Byzantine dialect, probably kind of early medieval, and very likely to have been brought over by people who were escaping iconoclast riots in the Byzantine Empire, who arrived in Puglia as refugees and speaking this dialect that's held ever since then, so for a very long time. It's not Greco is not ancient Greek. I studied ancient Greek at Oxford, and I've also done a lot of research into Greco dialect, and it doesn't make any sense at all to say that it's derived from ancient Greek. Also, the ancient Greeks weren't really in that area of Puglia. They were on the other coast in Taranto, so it doesn't make sense. But it is a medieval Byzantine Greek dialect, and there's a whole tradition of a bit of Greco poetry and song. And it is really completely delightful. Plug here. I'm writing a book. In fact, I finished a book called Come and Dance in Puglia, which is a 7-year work that I've just delivered to my agent, my literary agent now. So hoping that we're going to get a deal on that with a publisher. But I talk about all of this in there and about how the whole thing, about the Greek culture and how it evolved. But there's some incredible examples that I've come across of Greco poetry, which I don't sing, but really quite extraordinary poetry. I mean, really first order poetry and fascinating and sometimes quite weird. But this one is the Attica. I was walking through a field when I saw this beautiful girl up on a hill, she said, and she was picking flowers, and I said to her, you know, give me that flower, dammi lo fiore. So you've got a mixture of some Italian words mixed in with a Greco, and she said, whoever takes the flower takes the girl as well. So, you know, obviously there's certain sort of, there's a subtext to that one.
I want my ring.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. Okay, let's go straight into the next track, shall we? I mean, this one needs no introduction at all. I don't want to stop it, but because once it starts, it's got this momentum, this song, and you know, I guess we know it so well, and with some pieces of music, it doesn't matter how many times you hear them, you never get bored of them or not affected by them, and that really, I think a lot of our listeners are the same. The way that music opens our episodes is just so evocative.
While we were producing the album, there was a point where I said I don't want to hear this anymore.
We're not there yet.
We are talking about 30, 40, 50 listening in like one day. So
yeah. So can you demystify Kotze for us, please? Muscles.
Yeah, I think that's something that you see. It's not exactly my dialect, because Kotze in Italian is normally muscles. But in this context, in the area where the song is from, it also means snails, like escargot, like snails that you eat. So it's the story of, looks like, sounds like a story of this kind of slightly naughty seller, street seller, that comes back home in the evening, in the night, and his wife doesn't want to open the door because I want to know where you have been. What have you been doing? And they just say, I've been to the wine bar with my friends and I got a bit drunk. And Che say, well, okay, as long as you don't get arrested, you haven't been arrested, you can come upstairs. So it's a bit of do you remember that comic strips in, I think in the 70s, Handicap?
Yes.
It's a bit of kind of those stories. And Kotze Cittene Kotze, Kotze Piccine is the selling shout. No, when you are in the market, say two apple for a pound, two apple for a pound, that sort of thing. So that was it. It's a bit of there's a story, and the chorus, the chorus is this kind of market stall seller selling his nails. It's very simple. It's it's not particularly. It's just a funny story.
Cassandra, is it one of your favorites?
Well, I like the ones where I get to improvise a lot because it makes it fun as the in melody player. But this one I really like because it's got such a lovely melody that actually just playing, I don't actually improvise on this one because it's such a beautiful melody to play. And it's just like, boom, you just put that in the middle in between the verses and that'll do the job, basically. It doesn't need much more sprinkling on top of it.
And it's also a waltz, which is a sort of a musical device. We have a few waltz, Andra Mupai, for instance. It works as a device to set the mood of the night. After a couple of pizzica, you want to give a bit more like a relaxing, still ongoing, still energetic, but more like waving, more a bit more less intense.
Well, I get quite lucky on the waltzes because of my folk dancing background. I love to waltz. It's my favourite dance. It's my favourite rhythm. And then Daniela, the tamburello player, that all the kind of women and men watch when from the audience. He invites me for a dance, and then we set people dancing waltzes all across kind of the venue. So yeah, I get my little dance there.
You are our. Waltz specialist.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as I say,
it's funny when you have to jump back on stage and you have to play.
Yes, when I have Andra Mupai, that happens. I'm down there dancing and then, I know at the end of the third verse, I've got a solo. So, I go back on stage and then play the recorder
That can be a bit of a nightmare. I mean, Simona once or twice grabbing me for a pizzica. Then I've got to get back up on the stage and sing Andra Mupai afterwards. It's actually a bit of a mare. Yeah,
it's the song that is synonymous with our Giro coverage. And I wondered, I know a lot of our listeners have been to your gigs. You know, have you seen any of them react to that song enthusiastically when you start playing it?
Audience members from the podcast come, they generally come up to us at the end and say, "Wow, we listened to the podcast, we heard the music." But what generally happens at our gigs is that there's just an enthusiastic reaction for most of the songs, and you just can't tell one person apart from the next there's more of a reaction.
I was going to ask though about gigs. You know, this has obviously been a really hard year for everybody, but in particular the performing arts, and Amara Terra is all about the live performance, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, how difficult has that been? How hard has that been to kind of, you know, some of us have been lucky that we've been able to carry on working. And Mark, you've been able to write a book, but not being able to perform live, how much have you missed that?
A lot.
I'm in denial. I can't believe, I mean, we have been playing every month. Every single month, perhaps just a gap around August, since 2011, let's say 2012. So that's nine years playing live every month.
At least once or sometimes twice, sometimes three times, yeah.
And it is, I think the whole thing was a shock. This whole year was a shock. Obviously, the financial aspect for some of us has been intense. For us, for some less, because we have, let's say, day jobs, some of us. But I think it's like a shroud that fell all over the planet, in a way. It's also missing the other people playing, because London is a very tight community, especially the world of music. We know each other. We have lost people as well, some of our audience, especially one, which was the life.
God bless Pav. Yeah.
Yes, the life and the eye, an amazing photographer and a very nice, sweet man that left us.
Terrible loss.
So
terrible.
That was a terrible loss. So I'm just thinking, personally, I'm just thinking that we'll all come back, and we'll all come back soon, and we'll be all happy again, and put this sort of suspension in our life.
There's a kind of double-edged thing to it as well, because normally if you're going through a bad time, Music's a way of dealing with difficulty or pain. And not least this particular music, which is wonderful healing music. So going through a bad time, which is actually causing you not to be able to play the music that allows you to deal with that bad time, is, as I say, a double whammy.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view. If it was just a massive economic crisis, for instance, we would have played a thousand times. It would have made people happy. But this COVID is, it really affects our way of being together.
It's horrific, horrible.
I think that's what I miss the most, is the community around it. So you go, when you go to a gig, you don't just go to play the music. Obviously, the music is the main thing. But you always, we have a, I mean, Amoratera is wonderful. We have some groupies, and we have a special group of groupies, which is 60 plus. And they're our kind of main hardcore groupies. One of them, Vern. Vern comes and bakes us muffins, and he gives us muffins at the beginning of each gig. Pav, who we lost to COVID, photographs us and is always in the front row dancing. And then we've got Ali. Ali DJs for us. Ali is a fantastic DJ. So we've got our
Brilliant Pete Chalk. Got to mention Pete Chalk.
Yes. Wonderful. Absolutely. So, wonderful, so we've got this whole community, because we play in the same venues. We know the bar tenders really well. The sound engineers are our friends, and that they know us, and they play with us with the sound on stage as well. And then we've got, of course, regular members of the audience who just come and make it an event. And the thing is, every gig is like a party. It's not just a gig. It's not a gig that you go to. It's an event. And for me, it's a bit cliche to say so, but for me, it kind of recreates the kind of community sense that you might get on a piazza, you know, or that you might get in Spain or something like that. It recreates that event.
Yeah, and I think we're quite consciously trying to do it.
And one of the things I wanted to mention is that once or twice we've had a predominantly English, British audience that didn't know what to do. So at Jamboree, when we used to play there, sometimes we had a very British, majoritarily British audience, or it was early in the time and the Italians hadn't arrived yet. And you'd see that at the beginning, they didn't know what to do and they were standing very still and looking at us. But then by the end of the first half, they were all up and dancing and like joining in as they should join in. And all kind of barriers had left. And so that, I think, is the main thing about Amoratera, and that's what I miss.
That's right, and that ties into the thing of it being a healing music. As I was saying just now, it's a music that just makes people feel good. It's a wonderful, positive thing, and we love it.
Yeah. I remember that time of at the beginning when somehow we were starting to spread the voice and spread the cult. We put a lot of effort into involving people, going down off the stage, the dancers, dragging people in, really, because you could see from their feet that they wanted to do something, kind of fretting and shaking, but without
knowing what to do.
although there have been a peak, let's say, of regime, there were times that people started to dance during the sound check.
What one of the great things about the band is that in that period that Alfredo is talking about, there was Simone and Carla, who are two fantastic dancers. And because they set off the gig by dancing and basically being on the floor with the audience and dancing amongst them, slowly they kind of learn the steps. And then two songs in, they realise that the steps are basically hopping one side to the next. There's nothing to it. And then so eventually they join in. And that, I think that having those dancers coming, who are also amazing singers, by the way, coming off and up and down the stage really helped to create that, to erase that barrier that we have often with that stage and those musicians in the audience. No, it's everybody together to have a good time together.
Exactly.
Let's play another track here. So, Tarantella del Gargano, how's that?
That was the Tarantella that I knew from 1977. One of the things that just made me fall in love with this, and it's from a different tradition. Puglia is enormous. It has 800 kilometres, 500 miles of coastline. And the Gargano is the very extreme end of the peninsula. And they have a very different tradition that is, in some ways, would you say, Alfredo, more closely related to the tradition of your original tradition?
Well, the dialect is of the Napolitan kind, although I don't understand it, but it's a different family than Salentino. And certainly the communication line. I mean, the thing is that before cars, before modern transportation, these distances were huge because Salento goes really, really, really down south. Gargano is basically the hill, it's the top of the hill, and is much closer to Naples, to the
capital. The spur of the hill, they should have called it.
Yeah, the spur.
Sperone.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Gargano is slightly different. It's, I think there's less drums, and it's more in the tradition of popular chansonnier, you know, going to do the serenade.
It's very plaintive. It's a very plaintive sort of song. I feel like I'm being transported through deserted, narrow streets in an Italian town, and then stumbling on a private party somewhere when you get the vocals beginning. It's a very atmospheric,
very
sort of song.
There's more focus on the romantic aspect as well. Most of the this song has been originally recorded in the 70s, where Mark is talking about, by Eugenio Bennaro, and which was one of the pioneers, in an album which is the Cantori di Carpino, which is that Carpino is a village in that area. And most of those are serenade songs, things that you would sing to your girlfriend, possibly from a balcony. There's an art form, especially in Naples, which is called Pusteggia. It's a similar thing. It was an art form that you would hire musicians to go with the mandolin and the guitar and a good voice under the balcony of your fiancé, and basically entertain her with a show and the beautiful words about her beauty and things like that.
So there's something about I want to create a garden for my beloved to walk around. So that's actually a beautiful poem.
The tamburella players like these slow songs because it means they don't have to play too much in them and have a little break, because I don't know if you've noticed, but they end up the gigs with blood on the tamburello, because that's how much, like, they get blisters and bloods like at every single gig, basically. So these songs are very good for us to intersperse them in the gig so that they don't basically wear themselves out.
Let's go to the fast version of Pizzica di San Vito.
Song is from Simona's hometown.
San Vito, yeah, as in St. Vitus, the St. Vitus dance.
It's there are these fast and slower versions of it, which the slow verses are kind of languid, isn't it? And there's a lot of energy in when you speed it up, obviously. Is that the one you tend to play at live gigs? Alfredo, you said you haven't played it for a while.
No. We tend to actually speed up everything, even when we shouldn't. No, this one was one of the most interesting projects that we did at Samara Terra, which was producing the soundtrack for a documentary by one of our fans, again, a guy from, I think he's from Dubai, if I remember well. He was doing a documentary Qatar, yeah. He was doing a documentary for Ali. Al Jazeera in English, about a spice.
And perfume.
A perfume, yeah, a particular perfume, aromatic wood, which is very, very popular in the Middle East and all over the spice and Silk Road. And he wanted our music. He was there every night. I said, I want your music. But I want something that is more adapt to a documentary.
And he said it reminded him of some of the music from his own Arab tradition, which I thought was really interesting too.
Well, there is this lamentation thing, which is a common pattern across the Mediterranean. This thing of singing in a slightly lamentative thing, or from throating singing as well, and this micromodulation, you find them in Cante Hondo, which is, I think, is the flamenco.
That's style. Right, Seville, yeah.
Yeah, you find it in Ottoman music, in Greek music, Byzantine music, where it is actually, I believe, is codified in the sense that you explicitly write down to a quarter of a tone, an eighth of a tone. Cassandra, am I saying right?
Yes, the different scales. The makams, yeah.
So it touches a lot of things. It touched the Celtic tradition as well with the 6-8 rhythm. I remember when I was in SOAS, people asking me, is this Irish? Said, okay, well, I take it as a compliment because I like Irish folk music, but it is not Irish.
Let's play the last track here, shall we? What can you tell me about this one?
Okay, Kalinifta means an enormous amount to me. On my, 50th birthday, which was only a year or so ago. it was a while ago. On my 50th birthday, my then wife brought along a pizzica group, which included Daniela Matta, whom at that point I hadn't met, who's become this quite important figure in my pizzica and pugliese world. And this group performed, and I said, can I do... And I'd learnt Kalinita, which I'd heard at La Notte della Taranta, sung by the lead singer of... by Giuliano San Giorgi, the lead singer of Negramaro. He it ended up something like 4 a.m, just as dawn was breaking. And they actually shouted, "Buon alba, good dawn," to people as we were leaving. But they ended with Kalinita, and I just hadn't heard anything like it. It was just knockout wonderful. So superbly performed by him. And I just thought, I've got to learn this. And it's in Greco again. So I went off and I learnt that one song and I performed it at my 50th party. And I, of course, being trained as I am, I worked out what every single word of it meant. And it's a kind of, and it's a lament about my girlfriend, you know, the usual stuff. And she's going, you know, I'm not getting anywhere with this girl. You know, I'm going to go off and I'll leave you and I'm miserable and I'm wretched and it's how it goes and good night. So anyway, so I was singing it for all it was worth. And every time it came to the chorus, I had the band behind me doing this, doing these sort of kind of obscene sort of satyr-like gestures and just taking the mickey out of the whole thing. So totally undermining what I was trying to achieve, the atmosphere I was trying to set. I then performed it next time when at a wedding, which bizarrely I officiated at. God knows what they asked me, but anyway, it was a wedding that took place in the Masseria, which I owned and still own there, which has its own little chapel, and we performed Kalinita then as well. So it was the one number that I really kind of had off pat. And then when I found out that Amara Terra existed, I got in touch with them and I said, "Can I sing Kalinita for you at this gig?" And then they asked me to come back as a guest. And I was so persistent and annoying and irritating and introduced another song. Eventually, they said, "Oh, come on, all right." And I sort of eventually became kind of a paid-up, card-carrying member of the group. But it was Kalinita has been my passport into this music all the way along, really. And it's a song that I'm passionate about to this day, can never get enough of it.
Well, not surprisingly, it's basically almost there all the time, our closing title, or next to closing title. It's also very nice because it allows slightly more informal dancing. So it's nice to gift our amazing friends in the public. It's something that, and you dance it hugging each other or in circle. Going in circle, holding each other. So at the end of the concert or the gig, it's absolutely fantastic. It is exactly how people would like to close the gig, by hugging each other and dancing together. But they might not have the courage to do, and we provide the music which kicks them in. Basically, it just comes naturally. As soon as we start to do that umfa, everybody just gather in a circle and dance, and it ends in a mess, like all our songs. it's a kind of big happy riot. I think we all love that song for this reason.
The end of Amara Terra gigs have kind of become a little mini ritual where you have Kalinifta, where people start slowly and Mark has this kind of epic ending, which is in a mess. And then maybe sometimes we play a pizzica, but after the last song, our DJ Ali, who's always in the booth, just kicks off with Bella Ciao. And then we're still on stage and then everything kind of kicks off massively. And then as soon as the chorus of Bella Ciao starts, then the whole band kind of runs into the audience and just mingles. And there you go. That's kind of the end of it.
It's a mosh pit. It becomes a mosh pit.
Yeah, basically. It's a bit scary.
It's a karaoke moment.
Do you think that, you know, we hope that things are going to return to normal. You know, I don't think there'll be a very sudden transition. It'll be gradual. But when we are able to go to gigs again and things like that, do you think there'll be a real reaction to this period and a real kind of embrace of live music in particular? Because you mentioned, Alfredo, the kind of the sweaty kind of nature, the intimacy of your gigs. Are probably the thing that is least advisable in the COVID times. So once we're properly through this and we can do that kind of thing again, do you think that people will really kind of embrace it, and that there'll be a kind of renewed appetite for that sort of show?
Well, I think there would be 6 months of party or something like that.
I have a secret plan. I haven't told the band yet, but I have a secret plan.
Yes.
I think that there will be like a massive kind of comeback, and I think we will get lots of people interested. I think there's no point of Amaratera playing until we can do that again. Having a socially distanced Amaratera gig just makes absolutely no sense. You know, we might as well
do a spin off something nice, but it wouldn't be Amaratera.
Exactly.
Something else. And I think there will be a hunger for this kind of events.
But what I'd like to do, what I'd like to do ideally is to get these friends from Paris that the band knows, or most of the band knows now, and Daniela Mazza, who Mark has referred to several times and who invited us to Puglia last year, and get these people together in a big venue in London with us, and kind of have a massive kind of festival type, although it's not a festival, but festival type gig to kind of celebrate again, just being able to do this kind of thing again. So that's my secret plan, but
wonderful, it'll
take a bit of planning and a bit of money, but it'll be fine.
Marvellous.
And actually, hopefully, if not launch, but at least present our album on that night, if possible. It might still be a year away because we might not be able to do it then, but that would be the ideal thing, yeah.
That's a wonderful note to end our discussion on, I think. I mean, I want to say thanks to you all on behalf of the Cycling Podcast, all our listeners. You saw the reaction on social media. The reaction the music always gets on social media is quite phenomenal. If we tried to change our Giro music, I think it would not go down well. So I think we just want to sort of acknowledge our appreciation of it and love for it, because our Giro coverage just would not have the same atmosphere. There's a sort of, you know, it sets a kind of a tone and atmosphere for our whole coverage, and it just wouldn't sound Italian. It wouldn't transport people in the way that we hope it does to Italy and to Italian culture.
Without that music, we would like to reciprocate, because you guys and your audience have been our most loyal supporters. And I can see that when there is the Giro, I can see the retweets, I can see the engagement, and I can see a surge in sale of our album, which is something you guys have helped us a lot, helping us.
Well, while I've got you there, tell me how do people, as I say, people did respond to the article in The Guardian about the BBC experience. How can our listeners support Amaratera, presumably by buying your CD? How do they do that?
We have the EP, so it's not our full album, it's our EP. The full album is what we're working towards, but our EP is available on Bandcamp. And Bandcamp is the best platform for this. Unfortunately, it's only digital because we sold out the hard copies. I've got miraculously one on my shelf here that I managed to save for myself. We sold out the hard copies, but it's still available digitally. It's got most of the songs that are on the Giro d'Italia on it. And it's kind of a raw first take of our music, which I think is fantastic. It's available on there. I think it's very affordable. How much is it, Alfredo?
I think it's £5. I have to say, we always... We have been treated generously by the listeners of the Cycling Podcast, and I want to take another opportunity to say thank you all.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to Amaratera talk as much as I enjoyed talking to them. Thanks to them for helping us make this special seasonal episode, and of course for providing our Giro soundtrack since 2016, and hopefully for many years to come. Since we recorded this interview, there is an update on the story of Amaratera and the BBC. The Musicians Union got involved. It Takes Two, the show in question, said that there had been a genuine misunderstanding and that mistakes were made in their communications with Amaraterra. As a gesture of goodwill, BBC Studios is making a donation to the Musicians Union Coronavirus Hardship Fund. Of course, Amaraterra are like any other band this year. Live shows are their lifeblood, and without being able to perform, they have not been able to fund activities such as finishing off their new recording. Of course, some of you, because of where you live, wouldn't be able to go to their concerts even if they were able to play live at the moment. But when I suggested that I thought some of our listeners might want to show their appreciation for their music, Amaraterra were reluctant to set up any kind of fundraising page. However, I like to think I talked them into it. So here it is. If you'd like to support Amaraterra or buy them a virtual cappuccino or even a pizza, go to igg.me/at/Amaraterra. That's igg.me/at/Amaraterra. AmaraterraA. And the link will be in the show notes as well. You can also buy their music on Bandcamp at amaraterra.bandcamp.com. And that money does obviously go to help support the band. This is our last episode of 2020. Thanks to everyone who has tuned in this year for our Giro, for the Tour de France, the Grandest Tour, or the cycling podcast Femina, Service Course, or Explore. Thanks to the friends of the podcast who support our work. And thanks to our headline sponsor, Iwoca. And thanks too to our longest standing supporter, Science and Sport. And don't forget your 25% discount with the code SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. Thanks to Adam Bowie for producing this episode. The music was by Amaraterra.